Welcome to Assembly Line, the podcast for entrepreneurs building on the Salesforce platform. We'll go behind the scenes with innovative founders and leaders to share their stories, strategies, and lessons to accelerate your own path to success as a Salesforce ISV. Are you looking to connect with the most dedicated founders and builders in the Salesforce ecosystem? The Assembly Line audience is made up of the exact ISV partners and entrepreneurs you're trying to reach. We're opening up a few sponsorship slots to partner with brands that can truly help our listeners succeed. If you're ready to connect with the leaders of the App Exchange, you can learn more at assemblyline.com/sponsor. That's assemblyline.com/sponsor. All right, so I'm really excited today because I'm going to be joined by Heather Mason, who has been in the ecosystem for over 10 years now, over five of which were at Salesforce directly. In that time, she has worn a lot of hats, but always had a focus on the partner ecosystem. She was a partner account manager at Salesforce. She was leading partner strategy at Salesforce for a while, and now she is at ISV Accelerators, which is providing fractional alliance leadership for Salesforce ISVs. So welcome to Assembly Line, Heather.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Talk about one of my favorite conversations.
The partners, right? This is going to be a great...
ISV partners.
Yeah, any ISVs need to really be on the edge of their seat right now because I love any time I get a chance to chat with Heather and pick her brain. I always end up learning something. So, let's just, to get started, maybe you could provide some background on your experience in the ecosystem and what exactly ISV Accelerators is providing to clients today.
Yes. I will focus on my background first because I think this is the reason that I'm so passionate about ISV partners. Like you said, I've been in the ecosystem over 10 years, probably about 12 right now. And I started at an ISV partner, building the partner relationship between a company at the time called Insight Squared, which provided out-of-the-box analytics to Salesforce customers. So I was building the relationship between this small company and Salesforce. The cool thing about that company was that, again, it provided out-of-the-box analytics for specifically SMB customers, and it filled a gap in the Salesforce product set, which is what made it a really compelling ISV. Customers needed better analytics. Insight Squared provided that functionality. Well, shortly after starting, Salesforce acquired what is a company, started as a company called Wave, which was their first version of analytics, and then iterated to a bunch of different versions. So building a relationship with Salesforce while also being somewhat of a competitor as they launched a new product was a really interesting 5 years. But that allowed me to really build relationships with some of the people at Salesforce that were really influential. Most importantly, I might say, you know, Mike Wolf was a great proponent of what we were doing and helped really bring us together. So anyways, long story short, I spent 5 years building the partnership there. Then I came to Salesforce and spent 5 years inside Salesforce in a couple of different areas, but always focused on the partner side. I started in partner sales, which is that agnostic voice between SI partners and core sales teams, helping bring in the right partners for the right sales cycles. And then I moved on to the ISV team, which was great because I got to see it from the other side. How do you take a summit partner and truly provide value to an end customer by showing what a full solution looks like? Then, after managing two of the top summit partners, I went into what was probably the coolest role at Salesforce. For those who don't know, LaShonda Anderson-Williams was leading the healthcare division at that time. She had come over from Microsoft. And as you know, in the Microsoft ecosystem, partners are everywhere. Having partners is key to their growth strategy. It's how they, you know, they've got so many and they're really tightly embedded, which I think is an area that Salesforce has sometimes struggled with. So she came to Salesforce to manage the HLS division. And she said, listen, it feels like a very disjointed process. We're selling our products. We have ISVs that are selling products. We have SI partners that are selling products. How can we package all of this together as a full solution to make it easier for customers to buy? That was music to my ears because that's what I had wanted to do at Salesforce the whole time I was there, that really bring this whole solution together for customers. So she started a pilot program, and I was responsible for helping support the top 16 pharma customers at Salesforce at the time, bringing together SI partners, but more importantly, ISV partners to help sell full solutions. And that was really the coolest role. For a lot of reasons, it wasn't set up in a way that made it through layoffs, I'll say. So when layoffs came, the first big round, the whole program got cut. But I think what it provided was the validation that there is a need for this in the ecosystem, that bringing SI partners together with core solutions to satisfy customers' problems is really the gap that still exists at Salesforce. And so coming off the back of that layoff, I started ISV Accelerators to continue that mission. How can we help SI partners better co-sell with Salesforce so that it makes it easier for customers to buy solutions? And really at the heart of it, that's what ISV Accelerators is set to do. And we focus really on what we call high potential Salesforce ISV partners. Those are the partners that provide a gap or fill a gap in the Salesforce product set that customers are asking for and helps drive meaningful ROI for a customer. When you have those three things as an ISV partner, you have a very strong value prop to Salesforce and you can get a lot of momentum behind you to help you sell your product. It's not to say that other ISVs aren't high potential or great partners, but to truly have a good co-sell message, you need to have those three things. And so those are the kind of partners that we really love to work with.
So is any of that strategy driven by some battle scars you might have from Insight Squared? Because you mentioned that at that time there was a little bit of competitive selling going on, and that you the acquisition of Wave, Insight Squared also was focused on analytics, and you mentioned that it was an interesting time. Does that time drive the strategy for ISV Accelerators today at all?
I would say that if you're looking to get fast ROI, having a complementary versus competitive product is hugely important. So the short answer is yes, for sure it did. Yeah, I would say yes.
Well, that's interesting. So I'm curious to get into some of the strategy that you see providing the most wins for your clients today. So for instance, if you I know you just came back from Dreamforce 2025. I know that there were a number of announcements made related to the partner program that ISVs and OEMs are going to want to pay attention to. What do you see, being an expert in this field, as some of the biggest opportunities right now out there for Salesforce partners that they need to attack?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say if we back up just for a second and let's see like what makes a good co-sell relationship, I think the one thing to keep in mind regardless is how can you help Salesforce teams drive Salesforce license revenue? Full stop. If your product can help either sell more licenses, get into new logo customers, satisfy a problem that customers have that Salesforce can't solve, you have a good strategy. You have a good co-sell motion. So regardless of what else happens, understanding how you can help drive Salesforce revenue and having a strong point of view on how you do it and be able to translate that message to sales teams is hugely important. And so really that's the first place that we start. Like, what is it about the companies that I work with that help Salesforce grow? Historically, what we'd say is like, obviously, helping get new logos is important. Helping customers be more sticky. How can we make sure that Salesforce, is a stickier product? That, can we help that company land and expand? I think those are all things that I wouldn't say are dead. They're certainly still important. But if you look at the shift at where Salesforce is going, when you look at things like Agentforce, Data Cloud, really the agentic conversations, I think you're going to see a shift in what's important. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the things that we're thinking about now. What is shifting inside Salesforce? What does this new agentic world mean from a AE compensation perspective, from a company growth perspective? And how can the partners that we're working with support that new world? And if I look at it, I think it's hugely exciting because what we've seen is big ecosystems like the Microsofts of the world, and I keep referring to them just because they happen to be top of mind, but they're really focused on consumption models, right? Like how can ISV, how can the partner system around Microsoft help drive more consumption? Salesforce has never really had a play like that. It's always been just strictly license revenue. AEs get comped on their license revenue and a small piece of ISV, but the meaningful revenue from an AE perspective truly comes from selling their core licenses. Now things are shifting. Now there is a consumption component to it where ISVs might provide even more value than what a Salesforce agent might provide. And therefore, an AE might not care so much about selling their agents. If a partner agent can drive more consumption, they're going to go to the partner agent. So that's where I'm really excited, because I think that this whole agentic world is going to be a very, it's going to level the playing field for ISV partners. And when I say ISV partners, I'm talking about both ISV Force and OEM. I think we're going to need to clarify that in just a minute too. But I think that broadly speaking, being able to have a consumption component to it where it doesn't matter where who is driving the consumption, but that it's being consumed, makes it very easy for these nimble, fast, smaller partners to be able to create software, create technology that actually drives meaningful revenue for Salesforce. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I think AI has, like you said, leveled the playing field, right? So even smaller partners now can build a lot faster on top of the platform, make something that augments core functionality and provides a lot of value. Now, you know, the question a lot of partners have, though, right, is how do I get in touch with these AEs? How do I get in front of them? And do you, is that where ISV Accelerator steps in, because you have such a vast network? Or do you have any specific strategies that you know that ISVs should be using in order to make sure that, you know, they're seen by these AEs, especially with what you just said, that soon AEs are going to be wanting to tap partners a lot more frequently than maybe in the past?
Yikes. This is a tough one, because I think the answer is really, it depends. But I think what it starts with is you have to have good win stories. If you're a partner, and I've had plenty of partners come to us that don't have a lot of pipeline, don't have a lot of customers, have a fantastic product, but don't have the stories behind to be able to really drive meaningful engagement. I think the first thing is, before you start trying to reach out to AEs, make sure that you know your ICP, that you can sell your product, that you have messaging that's going to resonate with these AEs, because Salesforce AEs have, I don't remember, something like 60 products or something wild in their bag right now. The last thing they're going to worry about is like trying to understand an ISV partner solution. So I'd say even before you worry about reaching out to AEs, have marketing messaging that shows how you work with Salesforce products. And that matters to the customer, because they've already made investment in these products. So if you can talk to your end customer in a way that resonates with them, hey, we've already made a big investment in Salesforce, show me how your solution fits into that bigger picture, and then drive some wins off of that, you're going to have a much stronger story when it comes to being able to talk to these Salesforce people. And the reason I'm saying, really, I'm pushing ISVs, the ones that we talk to at least, very hard to be independent first. I think everyone's first reaction is, I'm an ISV partner now, who at Salesforce can help me sell? That is not the right way. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast might be saying, like, I used to have partner support and now I don't. I used to have a PAM and now I don't. Well, Salesforce is pulling back a lot of that one-to-one hands-on support, you know, from these partners. And so because of that, you have to have an even stronger message to be able to get in front of the AEs. So I'd say first, make sure you have your messaging right. Make sure you have some customer win stories. If you have a PAM, getting those win stories in front of the PAM, they're obviously your number one advocate to being able to get you connected with the right AEs. But even if you don't have a PAM, if you have a very strong reason for wanting to talk to AEs because you have a very strong value prop, there's somebody in the ISV team that cares about you as a partner. Even if you don't have a partner account manager, there's someone in the leadership chain that cares about your revenue, cares about how you can help drive the business. But having that story tight and having good proof points is so important to getting those conversations. Otherwise, it's very much, you know, renegade on your own. It's a tough road.
That makes a lot of sense, especially you mentioned that AEs now have like 60 products in their backlog, and that's only going to proliferate, I think, with AI, right? There's only going to be more, you know, in a year's time, there's going to be over 100 probably. And that also applies to the partner side. There's going to be a lot more ISVs probably in the future now that it's easier than ever to build. And Salesforce is definitely a very narrative-driven organization.
Yeah.
I mean, every keynote, Mark Benioff focuses and highlights several different key customers and tells their story, right? So that makes a lot of sense that ISVs should go the same route and be able to share their wins with, in order to drive more attention from those AEs.
And that's really the hardest part I've found, especially with founder-led companies. So in my experience, founder-led companies, those guys that build, or girls or women that build these products, are so passionate about their technology. Oftentimes their technology is far superior to anything that, you know, a business person might create, or that Salesforce might create as like an add-on solution. Their products are so good, but all they want to do is talk about their products. And it's so hard to get a passionate, strong founder who's developed this amazing product to not talk about the product, but talk about the outcomes, or talk about the stories, or talk about why their customers buy. That is the single biggest shift that I work on with the companies that we work with, because it's mm-hmm. so important. People remember stories. People remember emotions. People aren't going to remember the functionality that your tool provides. So while it's cool, and for the right buyer, it makes a ton of sense to be able to go into those details, that's not a story. You've got to be able to tell a story about outcomes and why people chose your product and the impact that it made in their business.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. A lot of times people want to get on and just onto a sales call and just want to go feature, right? And I've heard before that it's better to, you know, ask your prospect what kind of jobs they have to be done. I think there's even a framework, I forget who came up with it, called jobs to be done, that you should be focusing on. And like you said, outcomes rather than just specifically focusing on features.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so I want to shift gears a little and talk a little more about some of the announcements that were made at Dreamforce, because I know you were in attendance and you came back very excited about some of the announcements that were made relating to ISVs, I think particular OEMs, but yes. I'll let you expand on that.
Yes. So when you look at the Salesforce ISV ecosystem, there's two general models that these partners fall under. There's the ISV Force licensing, which... And there's the OEM. So OEM partners, as you probably know, can sell completely independent of Salesforce. They have Salesforce license embedded in there, but they're standalone orgs, which oftentimes do not include other Salesforce products. They can, but generally speaking, they're standalone orgs. ISV Force licenses, without getting over my skis, generally are shared orgs. So there's Salesforce licenses and there's partner licenses. Both of those types of models roll under the ISV category. Historically, I think a lot of the focus has been on ISV Force partners, the ones that sit in shared orgs, help drive licenses together with Salesforce. That's the traditional co-sell model that we know. And OEM partners have kind of been left to the side from a go-to-market perspective because they've historically been thought of as competitive. Customers can choose to either buy nCino or Financial Services Cloud, you know, mm-hmm. one or the other. Veeva is probably the best example of an OEM partner, right? Like so many med tech companies would use Veeva and not buy full Salesforce licenses. So the AEs, generally speaking, were not big fans of Veeva because they couldn't sell their core licenses because Veeva had it. Now we can talk about what's gone on with that partnership since then, but I don't think that's relevant to this conversation. But the point is, historically, OEM partners have not been a very strong co-sell. There hasn't been a very strong co-sell motion because it was thought of, generally speaking, as a competitive product to selling core licenses, and AEs get compensated on core licenses. Mm-hmm. Now, as we were talking about with this whole agentic shift, there is a huge opportunity for OEM partners because they can independently drive consumption. I think one of the problems in the current licensing monetization of Agentforce is that ISVs don't know how to judge consumption. There's no metrics that Salesforce has put out to say, hey, your licenses are consuming this much stuff, so you should charge this. So pricing for Agentforce is really, really challenging right now. I did learn at Dreamforce that coming out on October 28th, there's going to be more guidance around pricing. So that should be helpful. But I think the net of it is still shared orgs is really hard for them to understand who is driving consumption. Is it the ISV partner? Is it Salesforce? Mm-hmm. With OEMs, that's completely different. It's very clear that the OEM partner drives consumption because they're the only ones in there. So to be able to track and monetize that for an ISV partner, an OEM ISV partner, is much easier. So there's going to be a lot more focus put on supporting these OEM partners. How can we get more of these guys into market selling their stuff? They can monetize it. It's easier for them to do, but it's also driving consumption, which we care about. So I think for the first time, there's a true value for these OEM partners to Salesforce and to Salesforce AEs. And I think internally, there's also a shift around how AEs are being compensated to shift from an ACV perspective to an AOV perspective. And that's meaningful because now AEs are going to care about consumption, are going to care. There's new ways for them to get revenue versus just selling their core licenses. So I think that part is going to be really exciting to see how this new support model for OEMs is going to evolve, and now having a message that will resonate with AEs perhaps differently than it ever has before.
Gotcha. And just to clarify too, so ACV, annual contract value, and you mentioned AOV, average order value, right? For the
yes.
uninitiated listening.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And just some things to think about as it relates to that. Like in a typical ACV model, things like stickiness, things like land and expand are important. Getting in the door, starting small because you know that the contract can grow later is important. In AOV model, it's much more front-loaded. What can you do today? How can you help us sell multi-cloud deals? How can you help us drive consumption? How can we get stuff in the door today versus the previous model of like, how can we get in and grow? Mm-hmm. And again, that's because of the whole shift to consumption. It's a different message. It's a different value prop. And it's one that OEMs are especially suited to be able to, provide benefit to.
Gotcha. So probably going forward, to your point, AEs are going to be looking to partner a lot more with OEMs than in the past, because now they can have some of their quota covered by selling the Agentforce Flex credits, right? That are the consumption is being driven by the models or the agents that the OEMs are building. So now, rather than being on the sidelines, OEMs are going to be more in the game. Am I understanding that right?
I absolutely think so.
Are you struggling to make sense of the Salesforce Security Review? It's the number one roadblock slowing down your AppExchange launch. Security Review Partner translates those complex reports into a simple, prioritized checklist. Stop deciphering jargon and start shipping faster. Get the clear, step-by-step guidance you need to pass the review with confidence. Simplify your path to market. Visit securityreviewpartner.com today. That's securityreviewpartner.com.
Because the other thing to think about too is like, as you look at people adopting agents more and that really becoming prolific, what you're going to see is a cannibalization of core licenses, which is to be expected. I mean, it's the typical innovator's dilemma of, you know, how do you disrupt your business before someone disrupts it for you? So I think it's very strategic in the way Salesforce is going about it. If we're going to be losing core seats because we want to push this agent stuff, how can we still make that compelling for our sales team to want to get behind this agent force adoption and consumption? So to do it, we're going to compensate our AEs accordingly so that the consumption piece, makes up for the attrition that we're going to lose on the Salesforce core seats, or even makes it bigger. Because I think, you know, obviously this isn't new to anybody, but making sure that you align AE compensation and metrics to what you want them to do,
sure,
is hugely important. So I think there's going to be a lot of shifts as that comes about, but it's all exciting from a partner perspective anyways.
The compensation metrics certainly are going to drive a lot of the behavior from the partners themselves, right? So I know with the ISV Force partners, Salesforce is really trying to drive more agents in their agent exchange portion of the AppExchange, right? By offering incentives, like I think they reduced the security review fee down to $1, and I think they gave priority reviews to those partners that were submitting agents to be listed, right? And so now I think this announcement that it sounds like we'll get further details on in about a week, we're recording this on the 23rd, is going to really push OEM partners even more.
Yeah. So in typical Salesforce fashion, they're great at marketing, right? They want to make a big splash. They want to drive excitement and engagement. So when Agent first came out last year, towards the end of the year, they gave, you're right, it was down to $1 for security review. They were really driving partners to create agents and just be able to fill up the Agent Force exchange with volume. I think very shortly after that, the shift came to, okay, we still want partners doing it for sure, but having meaningful agents is important. So versus going for breadth and just trying to get as many as we can, we really need to put focus and priority and emphasis behind these partners that are driving meaningful agents that will actually produce results. And I think that was the fastest shift that I've ever seen from Salesforce, quite frankly, making the shift from volume to depth. I guess the takeaway from that is like, don't just build an agent to have it and say that you have an agent, but actually put meaningful thought behind it so that it's driving or has the ability to drive significant consumption is important.
Sure. I think the refocus on OEMs also is we've been seeing over the past several years, Salesforce focus more and more on specific verticals. And traditionally, I think OEMs, that's their sweet spot, is their Salesforce for real estate or their Salesforce for, you know, automotive industry or what have you. And so it makes sense that as Salesforce themselves want to be focusing more and more on industries, they realize maybe we just need to get more tighter with our OEM partners.
Well, actually, that brings up an interesting point that I hadn't really thought of. But a lot of times there's, I'll say, a little bit of trepidation from Salesforce partners, especially OEMs, in like aligning with the product teams at Salesforce or giving insight into what their product does, because there's been plenty of situations where Salesforce has, you know, learned from a partner and then built the same feature. And now that poor ISV is like, great, so I built all this stuff and now Salesforce is doing it. And that's not fantastic. But looking at the OEM models and looking at how important fast adoption for Agentforce is, I would suggest that some of these OEM partners who are smaller, more nimble, more expert in their industry might make Salesforce think twice about building that same feature set, because they are not going to get the same adoption as quickly as a highly specific, you know, energy and utilities partner who has an OEM solution already built out. So I'm actually really interested in following how some of that works in some of the more specific industries, because I think there's a huge opportunity there for partners to be able to, you know, really take advantage of what they've already built. That's interesting. I'm glad you actually brought that up.
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, I think you're right. There's a lot of fear when you're playing in somebody else's sandbox that they're gonna take your toys and kick you out at any time, right? But there's also a lot of, and there are, to your point, there are examples where Salesforce has built tools that ended up squeezing out some partners. But there are also a lot of examples of Salesforce acquiring partners, right?
So also that
you gotta, there's high risk, but maybe high reward too sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
So at ISV Accelerators, what are some of the big with all these big shifts coming from the mothership? How are you guiding your clients right now through the choppy weather?
As much as I'd like to say I'm absolutely pivoting and going to ride the wave of these strategic changes as soon as they're announced, I've been in the ecosystem long enough to know that like there's a lot of marketing ahead of true substance, whether or not I should be saying that, you know, is left to be determined. But my point being is that I think it's important to stay close to these announcements to understand the impact, not only for the partner, but for the selling teams, for your other stakeholders in the Salesforce, so you can really understand what it means and how it's translating to business results internally at Salesforce. But in the meantime, I'm focusing on the basics with our partners, making sure that their messaging is very, very strong. The better together piece of it comes through. And I'd say, if anything, that's probably the piece that I'm shifting the most for our customer, for our clients, is focusing less on the stickiness. How can we help Salesforce with stickiness? How can we help, you know, maintain, how can we help you land and expand? And maybe shifting some of that messaging to, how can we help you sell multi-cloud deals? How can we help you drive consumption? How can we help front load a lot of the stuff that you're trying to do? So I'd say from a messaging perspective, the better together messaging has always been important, but shifting it in a way that is going to resonate with the new AOV model versus ACV model. That's probably the biggest shift I'm making. But also putting pressure, for lack of a better word, on the ISVs to think about, how can your solution help drive some of the agentic features that Salesforce is trying to produce? How can, like, what else can we be doing to help support and complement that? Not necessarily suggesting they do it, but let's think about what the art of the possible is, and then let's have some strategic conversations with Salesforce about what that would mean. Is this meaningful? Is this something that's already on your roadmap? Is this something that, if we create, we can have an executive sponsor within the business unit that we care about to push it when it's done? Because nothing's worse than building something and then having nobody care about it. Having all these great conversations, then you build it and they're like, cool, thanks. You're like, no, you helped me. Like, how can you find the right people that, once it's done, help you drive that into market, because they have a stake in it too, because they contributed, you know, all of the things.
Sure. Okay. You mentioned earlier that one of the main things with your go-to-market strategy, right, is making sure you find your ICP and making sure you build up those stories of your customer wins that you can then bring either to other prospects or to Salesforce AEs directly. Do you have any other tips you want to share to partners that are listening about go-to-market strategy that they should be thinking about going forward through the end of this quarter and into 2026?
Well, I think the important thing to remember is these last 3 months, November, December, January, is the last quarter for Salesforce. So making sure that any messaging that you have or any reach out that you do is specific to helping closing deals by January 31st. I think a lot of times partners may want to start conversations about, like, let's do some pipeline alignment, or let's do some, like, prospecting. What kind of sales plays can we put together? That's a great conversation to have in Q1, Q2. It's not a great conversation for Q4. So if I'm an ISV partner right now, I'm looking at my late stage opportunities. I am trying to understand what value there would be for Salesforce and helping close these deals, and then having a very specific ask as far as what you need. What I found is AEs are very open to helping, but more often than not, partners go in and, like, hey, here's all the cool things we do, here's Art of the Possible, and then stop. And the AE's like, cool, what do you need from me? And they don't have a very specific ask. They don't have if you make it easy and you're very prescriptive, an AE will help you, assuming that your value prop checks out. But don't go through all the effort of making a great value prop, getting the meeting, which is nearly impossible, but getting that meeting and then not having a clear ask. And it doesn't have to be a hard ask, but, like, if you know that the last thing you need to close your deal is to get in front of a certain executive, or to understand the buying cycle, or to know what roadblocks might come up that you might not be aware of, have those asks ready and give the AE something they can actually help you with quickly. Make it easy for them and be very, very prescriptive. And if you can do that, I think there's a lot of value in working with AEs, and they're going to be really helpful. But don't come at them Q4 with, like, hey, can we uncover net new logo opportunities with this sales play? Because they're going to be like, no, we can't.
Yeah, that's. I always forget that Salesforce their fiscal year doesn't end December 31st. So that's a good reminder that it's January 31st that it ends. Mm-hmm.
What I will say is, some of those more strategic conversations make sense to have with maybe an AVP or an SVP starting, you know, December, January, because they're the ones that are looking at what next year is going to look like. They're the ones doing future planning, QBR planning, kickoff planning, all of that. So when you're at the AE level, you have to think about what they care about today and towards the end of the year, which is closing. The higher up the chain you go, you want to be thinking more strategically. How can we help you next year? How can we help you, from SKO, sales kickoff forward, build new pipeline? Because that's what they're thinking about today.
Sure. So we've focused a lot on partnership between the ISV and Salesforce, the mothership itself. But obviously there's the whole other partner ecosystem, the SIs. Do you think that's still a very important channel for the ISVs to be focusing on and partnering on deals with their fellow SIs?
1,000%. Every opportunity that I work with my clients on, that we're talking to the Salesforce AE, the one question we always ask is, who is your SI partner? Because having that SI partner aware of your solution is so critical. As much as Salesforce wants to think that, you know, their trusted advisor to their clients and what they say really holds the most weight, a lot of times SI partners are the ones that truly hold the relationships. And making sure that they're aware of your solution. So when the client or when their customer says, hey, you know, I'm looking at this solution, you know, Vigiance, have you ever heard of it? You don't want the SI partner to say, no, never heard of it. You want to make sure that all the stakeholders around that customer are aware of your solution, what it does and why it matters. Whether that SI partner is going to actively push you or not doesn't necessarily matter as much as them not being able to, is them being able to say, yes, I know who they are and this is what they do. Yeah, SI partners are so critical to these conversations.
And so then how, same question that we had before about getting in front of AEs then, how would you recommend folks get in touch with SIs that they want to be partnering with? Is it still the same route, just send wins their way, or are we doing cold calling? These days, I feel like a lot of that's not done on LinkedIn, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bunch of different ways. You know, if you have open opportunities, I think working with the AE to get an introduction to the SI works really well. I think generally speaking, SIs want to know about partners that are new and innovative and creative because it makes them look like they know what's going on. They're cutting edge. They want to be informed. But I think even more so with SI partners, maybe equally, but maybe even more so than to Salesforce, having outcomes be the leading part of your message. We help clients achieve this outcome. One example, blah, 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 because that's what SI partners care about. How can we help our clients achieve measurable outcomes? If your solution can help do that, can help them do it faster, can help them unlock new projects, can help them, you know, find out what's core to what they care about and how can your solution help them do it. I think SI partners are easier to get in touch with than AEs. But having a really crisp value prop on why they should care is important.
Gotcha. So I've heard conflicting advice on this before, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts. How do you feel about incentivizing SIs through commissions and referral fees in order to really boost up your, the likelihood that they're going to think about you next time they're in front of a customer?
I think the answer is it depends. It depends primarily on the size of the SI and what they care about. If I offer Accenture 15% of a license deal that I have, they're not super, like, that's not what they care about. They could make, you know, 30K on my solution with a 15K referral. They could make 30K based on like a 15% referral, but they're going to really unlock opportunity if my solution can help them open up other lines of business or help them finish a project so they can move on to something else more faster. So I guess what I'd say is like, ask the partner, number one, what motivates you to sell? How do your other partnerships look? Do you take referral fees? I've talked to partners, they're like, we're not even set up to take referral fees. It's more of a nuisance than anything else. So no, thank you. And then I've had other partners, generally the smaller ones, but not always, say, yes, you know, we'd love to do, like, we're super motivated by a 15% referral. So number one, ask. Number two, figure out how they make money. If they make money by delivering projects and having a more strategic approach to clients, show them how they can do that with your solution versus focusing on the rev share piece of it. Most of the time, I'd say 90% of the conversations that I'm in, partners aren't interested in a rev share. It's more about how can we unlock other, whether it's implementation opportunities or other strategy opportunities. But it's all, if it's something that you're willing to offer, it's always something you should be asking and then let the partner tell you.
Gotcha. That makes sense. The It depends is good advice, because you're right. I think Accenture isn't going to be as motivated by 30K as maybe a small partner would.
Plus, it depends is just a great blanket caveat. Like, I start everything with that because you never know, right? And then I'm protected.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to ask you about kind of a third partnership route. Obviously, you can partner with Salesforce, you can partner with SIs. Do you see your clients having a lot of success trying to partner with other ISVs offering complementary products? You know, do you think there's value in trying, if you're selling peanut butter, do you go try and find the guy selling jelly? Or?
So that's a great question. I think in theory, 100% of the time, every time, yes, absolutely do that. I think from a product and technology perspective, it can be a little bit more complex. Are you talking about, you know, a go-to-market offering where we co-sell together, we uncover pipeline together, and then we each have our individual selling motions? Or are you talking about let's combine solutions and have a joint offering? I think there's people that are experimenting in both. Obviously, when you get to combining technology, things become a lot more complicated. But from a go-to-market perspective, I think that makes a ton of sense, especially around world tours, Dreamforce, executive roundtables. I think events are tough. I think both from a budget perspective and from an attention perspective, getting people to allocate their time to come to an event. But if you can have a couple of ISV partners together that serve the same market, complement each other, and can create a full solution, even in theory, makes a ton of sense. And I absolutely love doing that. And then from a product perspective, it's one that I think there's a lot of potential in. And I think there's even some SIs that try to do that, try to group a couple of partners together and create package offerings. I think it's great. I just think it's really challenging to do.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, I'm curious. So, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but is there any other strategy or insights for go-to-market that you'd like to share that we haven't already talked about with early stage ISVs?
I mean, I think that anything that I say that's going to be the most valuable is going to be things that people probably have already heard, but don't really put enough time to do well. Like, and what I mean by that is, like, the number one thing that I would say for all ISVs is to understand who you're selling to and make your message relevant to them. Don't come to Salesforce AEs with the same message you bring to a client or to your customer. Yes, you might achieve the same, like, the what your product does is the same in both situations, but a customer cares how it's going to solve their business problem. An AE cares about how it's going to drive revenue. So don't bring the same message from your customer-facing message into an AE, really, or to an SI partner for that matter, or to another ISV. So take the time to care about what your customer, whoever that customer is, cares about, and change your messaging to suit that customer. Don't do a standard demo, talk track, walking deck to serve all three or all four or all five. It's not going to resonate. Take the time to be specific. That's my number one advice. That's the number one thing I work with all my clients. And that's the number one thing that when I start to talk to them, they're like, yeah, we're good. And then I ask them to see their deck and I'm like, you're not good. And then we talk about why, and then we talk about how to fix, and then we go from there. But yeah, take the time to do the basics well.
That's great. All right. Well, as usual, I've learned a lot from this conversation. I know a lot of people listening have as well. and probably are going to want to learn even more from you. So what is the best way people can get in touch with you?
Great question. My email, heather@isvaccelerators.com, my website, LinkedIn, any of the above. I will say though, for LinkedIn, I love to connect with people, but I also love to have a quick conversation before connecting, because I don't think a network full of people that I've never met is helpful. So if you LinkedIn request me, I would love to have a quick chat and then connect. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll link that up in the show notes so people can reach out to you. Thank you so much, Heather, for joining. Appreciate it, and looking forward to chatting again soon.
Thanks for having me, Scott. This is fun.
Building an AppExchange business can be isolating. Are you tired of guessing what the right next move is to grow and scale? Don't go it alone. ISV Forge surrounds you with a curated group of fellow ISV founders who are on the same journey. We combine peer accountability with expert-led weekly webinars to help you overcome roadblocks and build a thriving business. Stop guessing and start scaling. Apply for the next cohort today at isvforge.com. That's isvforge.com.